Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guide and Magazine, Green Turtle Bay Resort, Marina Life, Richardson's Map Tech, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you're dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our ship store at www.greatloop.org/shipstore. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Hi, everyone. It's the AGLCA Home Port Crew as usual. We have with us this morning Beth, who's our marketing coordinator, Steve, who's our technical guru, and me. And I basically do customer service, so if you need help, let me know. For those non-members out there listening to the show, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, including the Atlantic and Gulf waterways, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and our wonderful inland rivers. Our association was formed for people who want to share their sense of adventure, curiosity about the Great Loop. Our webpage is www.greatloop.org, and we'd love for you to visit. On the left side of the webpage menu, there's many, many free resources, and you can also join from that page. We're very happy to say hello to our guest host this week, Dr. Jerry Reeves, former dean of the medical school of the famous MUSC in Charleston, South Carolina. For our regular listeners, you'll recognize Jerry as the medical expert. Jerry has done several shows for us on how to prepare medically and how to respond medically to emergencies on the loop. And he is also the owner of our MUSC health survey on our webpage. I would encourage all of the members, if they do have an incident on the water, to log into our webpage, members area, and update the health survey. It's very important for us to gather data. Jerry and Steve are going to be chatting about things that you can do in Charleston when you're going up the Intracoastal. Many of you will be on your way soon, and we'd love for you to stop and visit our wonderful city. During the program, if you have any questions or comments, it's a toll-free number. You can call in 877-497-1815. Jerry, why don't you tell us where to go in Charleston?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for the medical survey plug, Janice. We've now got over 300 people who reported illnesses and injuries, and it's simple to do, and it's going to be important because ultimately we'll compile it, and it'll make boating safer for everybody as we get the information on how to be prepared for that. But let's talk about my real favorite topic, which is my home, Charleston, and although we are in the midst of the loop right now, our boat is Sweetgrass is in Mississippi at Iuka, Mississippi, right where the Tom Bigby joins the Tennessee. But we're in Charleston, and we're enjoying Charleston, and we certainly know that all the loopers who stop here can expect to be in the, what I like to refer to as the finest city on the whole loop. And we've done most of the loop, and I can tell you with all bias in force that Charleston is actually the prettiest and best city, so plan to stay here a while when you're here.
I'm going to break in every now and then with comments. Jerry is a native Charlestonian. And I'm one of the folks that they refer to as wasn't born in Charleston, but got here as quick as I could.
Yeah, you're from off. Yeah, you're from what we call off.
Well, depending on who you talk to, it might be a damn Yankee.
Yeah, you're that too. Steve, did you have a question or do you want
No, that was just shooting my mouth off.
Yeah, well, I guess the first thing to discuss about Charleston is where, and if you're arriving by boat, is where to stay. And there are, of course, in a city this size, there are a large number of marinas. And in no particular order, I'll just list them real quickly. There's Ashley Marina on the Ashley River, has plenty of space. There's next to that is City Marina, which is the bigger one, the Mega Dock, it's called, even though it doesn't have as many slips as the Charleston Harbor Marina, which is across the Cooper. There's, excuse me, the Cooper River Marina, which is up the Cooper River and has fewer slips, probably the cheapest of them, although I haven't priced them for this talk. There's St. John's Yacht Harbor, which you get to on the Stono just before you go through Elliott Cut, and we need to talk about Elliott Cut, so don't let me forget to do that. And then my favorite place for and where I tell people to stay because of its convenience is the Charleston Maritime Center, which is on the Cooper River. It's just an easy walk from Harris Teeter Grocery Store and all of historic Charleston. But you can get to historic parts of town from either the Ashley Marina or the City Marina very easily by the trolley, which is free. And so if you stay in any of those three marinas, you're really close to all the action, so to speak. And
I think the City Marina runs a private shuttle van that you can take back and forth to the city or, you know, downtown also.
That's correct.
I think Charleston Harbor Marina does that too.
They probably do, thank you for adding that. Since I've never stayed in any of those marinas, I don't really know, but I do know about that. And by the way, one nice thing about the Ashley Marina and the City Marina is there's a little place to eat that I often eat at, the Variety Store, right there at the foot of the where the entrance to the Mega Dock, and a lot of locals eat there, and that tells you already it's a place that's worth visiting if you're moored in the marina. Any questions about marinas? I probably should say that there's a strong tide in Charleston. And it makes docking in these, all of them, a little bit tricky. But by the time you've gotten to Charleston, you've had plenty of tide and you've probably figured out how to negotiate those getting into small places with a good current. But unless you come at the change of tides either way, you will... and expect some good tide going through there. And I didn't mention where Steve and Janice, I guess, still or used to have their boat, which is Bohicket.
I was just going to mention that. Bohicket Marina is up the Edisto. Jerry and his wife, Jenny, are wonderful, wonderful harbor hosts in the city itself, downtown. But if you want to come up the river a little bit, Steve and I are the harbor hosts for the Bohicket area, and we would be more than happy to welcome you and bring you to the grocery store and whatever you need. So look into Bohicket also.
Yeah, Bohicket is right there by Seabrook Island, which is private, and Kiawah, which is private. But you can take a real estate tour and see the islands. And there's plenty to do at Bohicket Marina from the point of view of places to eat and shop and that sort of thing. Although there's a lot more to do in town. And do you want me to next talk about why I think Charleston's America's most historic city?
Just give us 1 second. I'm seeing a caller come in. I don't know if they're ready yet. I guess Beth will just interrupt if we do have a caller. But, yeah, why don't we give us your biased opinion, Jerry?
Yeah, you've never met anyone from Charleston that didn't think not only is Charleston the most historic city, it's the best city in the world, probably. But Charleston was founded in 1670 by the King George. He land granted the large proprietors, one of whom was Anthony Ashley Cooper, and for whom two of the rivers are named. The city is one of the a town is one of the oldest in the United States. And was part of every major war that this country has been involved in, the Revolution, the War of 1812, and of course the Civil War started right here. And one visit that's worth making is out to Fort Sumter. You can only go there by tour boat. It's a national park, and of course we're in the 150th. Remembrance of firing on Fort Sumter in the beginning of the Civil War. So there's that. But a lot of revolutionary history here. Yes, yeah, Steve?
Okay, we have somebody on that would like to ask you a question.
All right. Hello?
Mr. Clark?
I think he's still on hold, Steve.
Well, not according to mine.
Oh, he is according to mine, so whatever.
Any way to get him off a hold?
Well, let me see what I can do. We'll be back to you. You still here?
Hello? Why don't you just go ahead, Jerry?
Hello?
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 Hey, I can hear you. Why don't you continue talking?
All right. Was there a question?
I think we were...
We can't seem to get him connected, so just go ahead.
I heard him saying hello again. But
no, that was me.
Oh, okay. But,
Is there a caller on here?
Hello?
Gary's going to continue, Steve. We can't seem to see Mr. Clark.
Okay.
I'm still here if you can hear me.
I can hear you. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. My name's Bruce Clark, and I've got a 44-foot catamaran that I'm interested in bringing to Charleston. I wondered if there are any marinas there that could haul out a boat with a 21-foot beam, and if there was any dry storage available, say, later in the hurricane season.
There are a number of boat yards. One that could easily handle your boat, I bet, is Ross Marine, I know they got plenty of space for dry storage because that's you'll see a lot of boats there, and it's right on the Stono River south of Charleston, and then there's a Deaton's a boat yard, and I think that's on the Wando. Is that right, Steve? But anyway, yep. There's one in Charleston Boat Yard in North Charleston on the Cooper River, and I'm sure they could do it. So there are at least three boat yards that can handle that boat.
Thanks very much.
Rockville Marine, which is down the North Edisto River, I've got a 50-footer, and they can pull that, and they can store it if they need to.
We've got a 16-foot beam. I'm not sure about the 21-foot, but you can definitely call them. If you need to, let Steve know, and he'll give you contact information.
Great. Thank you.
But there are plenty of boat yards, and the one that I know the most about is Ross, because they got a huge yard there where there are boats up there all the time that are very large. But all four of those are possibilities.
Yeah, I came up with Rockville because that's always where I take my boat, so I have a lot of confidence in them.
Steve, who did the complete rehaul of ours? Wasn't that Ross?
No, that was Frank.
What was the facility, though?
The facility was Metal Trades, which isn't really – they don't really do much with recreational boats.
Okay, thank you. Why don't we go on, Jerry? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, the Charleston is historically notable for a number of firsts, and I always like to read the list. We had the first fireproof building. We have the first theater, 1736. Charleston was at one time the wealthiest city, more wealthy than Boston and New York. That was around in the late 1700s. And that's why there are so many beautiful homes. There are over almost 6,000 so-called antebellum, that's before the Civil War, collection of homes, which is the largest in the country. And they are, many of them are very ostentatious because it was the wealthiest place in this country, and they're still there. But back to the first theater, the first oldest college, municipal college, 1785, the first sporting golf club was 1786. Scottish merchants set that up. First tea plantation, 1802, and still now the only tea plantation in the United States. First native-born architect, Robert Mills, who designed some of the buildings in Washington and many of the buildings all around the South and certainly in Charleston. First Reformed Jewish Congregation, 1824, and the first regularly scheduled rail passenger service, 1830. The Best Friend was the name of that train. And 1851, a native Charlestonian actually invented and patented an ice-making machine, which, if you've been to Charleston in the summer, you know... must have been very welcome, because I remember when air conditioning came in my lifetime, and that changed Charleston for the better. There's no question. But a lot of first firing in the first state to secede from the Union, first firing, first battle in the war between the states. All of that is in Charleston, and it's. But the thing that is the real draw, in my opinion, is just walking around all the old streets in the historic part of town and just spending a day just wandering around, looking at the gardens in the back of each home, and seeing the architecture, which is extraordinarily well preserved.
If you see an alleyway, don't...
Jerry, if you were coming into Charleston by boat and were on the loop and only had a day or two to spend here, what would you see besides walking around the beautiful historic section? What points of interest do you think are the most significant to boaters?
Yeah, I would probably start by going to the visitor center, which gives you an overview of everything that's doable in Charleston in a few hours to several days, and also is right there at the hub of the transit, that the free trolley that'll take you to wherever you decide to go. It's also very close to carriage rides, and although there's several different routes, and it's a lottery system, so you can't necessarily get what might be the best route. But I would take a carriage ride because. Which is in open carriage and horse-drawn or mule-drawn carriage, and the guides are knowledgeable. They give you an overview of the history of the pound, but they go slow enough that you begin to, that you get to really appreciate it. You can also take bus tours and things of that kind, but I would take a carriage ride tour, and then I would go down and take the trolley down to the historic part and just wander around. If I only have one day, that's what I would highly recommend. And I would buy a sweetgrass basket. I wouldn't buy it necessarily at the market, which is a nice place to visit. It's primarily for tourists, but locals also go there. But if you want to buy a sweetgrass basket, the ladies that make them, the Gullah women, are on the corner of Four Laws, which is Meeting Street and Broad Street, and there are always several of the ladies there weaving the baskets, and they're there for sale, and they will always negotiate with you. So that we had some friends here in town doing the loop who went down there and got a just exquisite sweet grass basket, I thought, and they only paid $70, which is a buy.
Yeah. Jerry, do you know of any way a public transportation, a boater could get out to see the Hunley, which is a magnificent tour?
Again,
the Hunley is a submarine that was sunk right outside of Charleston.
It wasn't just a submarine. It was the first, which I neglected to say, the first submarine successful in warfare of sinking another boat. There have been several crews of the Hunley because it sank a couple of times and drowned the crews, and they're all buried out at Magnolia Cemetery, which incidentally is where my parents are buried. But I would again go to the visitor center and ask them about how to arrange that. I bet there's a way to get out there. But it is something worth seeing. It's recently excavated out of Charleston Harbor. It was lost for a very long, over 100 years. But it was found, and it's been brought up and restored. And it's amazing that crew of, I think it was 9 brave souls, because it was the third crew of it that died. The Hunley sunk the Housatania, which is a Union ship, nobody died on the Housatania, but the crew of the submarine did die all when they were trying to get away off of Sullivan's Island.
It is just amazing to look at the inside of that sub and just realize there were 9 men in that. It just overwhelmed me when we went on our tour. It was amazing.
It's really a spectacular thing to see. There's a replica of it right across at the Charleston Museum, right across from the visitor center. So if for some reason you can't get out to see the real Hunley, you can see a scale reproduction of it. Right across the street from the visitor center, and you will understand that it was mighty hard for 9 people, and they hand cranked the that propulsion system was hand cranking. They probably lost their oxygen and doing that extra work. They used it up, and that was that. But it's still a mystery why they all died. But while you're talking about leaving town, although there's so much to do in town, we haven't talked about eating, which is usually a looper favorite. We might come back to that. But is the plantations. There's Magnolia Plantation, Middleton Plantation, and Drayton Hall. Every one of those is worth visiting just to see the absolute magnificent grounds and the plantings out there, and to learn about the culture that led to the prosperity in Charleston. Unfortunately, a lot of it was based on slavery, which was a dreadful thing. Their grand homes and nothing quite like it anywhere else in America. And so those are also worth a visit if you have time to leave the town.
Jerry, we're starting to get close to our time out, but I know you wanted to mention Elliott Cut. Did you want to go back to that?
Yes. So, Elliott Cut, I haven't measured, but it's probably about 2 miles long. But it's the Stono takes a cut east towards the Atlantic Ocean. You've been on the Stono for some time if you're coming up the Intracoastal Waterway. And where the Stono takes an abrupt right turn, there's a man-made cut called Elliott Cut that joins the Ashley River to the Stono River. And because there's quite a difference in distance of the mouth of the Ashley and the Atlantic versus the Stono and the Atlantic, there's a tide differential. And so you get a real forceful running tide through that cut. And what you want to do, if you can possibly time it when you're coming to Charleston, is come to Charleston when the tide is ebbing or going out. That'll make passage through the Elliott Cut much faster because you'll pick up about a 3 to 4 or 5 knot current. But if you hit it on an outgoing tide, you'll end up going a lot that much slower. So it's not a dangerous place at all. It's just whether you like to go slow or fast. And if you like to go
fast. It's narrow, too.
It's narrow. It's narrow, but you can pass other boats in it. But it'd be interesting. I've done that before, but yeah, it's narrow and fast. So it's like a sluice going pretty quickly through either way, depending on the tide. Yeah. So try and time it with a outgoing tide. Yes, Steve.
The problem I've always had is, I try to figure out which way the current's going. It's never going the way I think it's supposed to be going.
Well, the way to think about it is the Ashley River is closer to the Atlantic, and so if the tide in Charleston is going down, then there'll be water rushing into there from the higher water in the Stono, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Very, very leading question. Do you have a favorite restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do. My favorite response to that is, "What do you want to eat?" But if I could only go to one, and because I was only going to be there one night or one lunch, I would probably pick Snob, slightly north of Broad. It's on East Bay Street, not that far from Broad Street, slightly north of Broad is the name of it. And Broad is, anyway, that's in the historic part of town. I'd go there. But, gosh, there's so many great restaurants, and it really depends on what you want to eat. But that's my favorite.
Thank you.
I bet you have a different favorite.
We live in Seabrook, which is an hour away from downtown Charleston, and we actually go to Charleston for a week and stay in Charleston for Spoleto, which is a world-renowned music and arts festival in Charleston. It runs the last couple of days in May and the first week or two in June, and basically we just visit restaurants. It's just, we just have our pick, and I don't really have a favorite. They're all so, so very good.
Let me tell you one to miss, because it gets a lot of publicity, but I would not, it claims to be the best seafood, but I think Hank's, right there near the market, one block away from the market, Hank's is the best place for local fresh seafood, not Hyman's. Hyman's is on Meeting Street, and it's the one that claims all this stuff. But Hank's it would be my place if you just wanted good, fresh seafood.
We've been there, and one of my favorites, too, is McCready's on East Bay.
I love McCready's.
Atmosphere there is very, very nice. The service is fantastic. But you really can't get a bad restaurant in Charleston. I would stay away from the tourist train. Hyman's the line to get in every afternoon for lunch and dinner is terrible. But you really can't go wrong in Charleston.
And I wonder why they're in that line, other than it shows you what marketing does.
Exactly.
But you're right, McCready's. And the interesting thing about McCready's is George Washington was in that building, and it's a beautiful setting. And I the food is excellent as well. But Charleston hosted George Washington there where McCready's is.
I hadn't realized that. The building is magnificent.
The other place that gets a huge line but's worth it is Justine's Kitchen.
Yeah, that's right. That's what they call soul food or gullet cooking, yeah.
Boy, is it good.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's plenty of bacon but really good and not expensive.
Well, I think we're just about out of time. Is there anything else you'd like to emphasize, Jerry?
Well, I would just say bring your walking shoes and plan to stay at least 2 days, because you'll never begin to see all of it. It is a lived-in museum, and therefore you have to walk around it. Bicycle, if you've got your bicycles, bicycle around it. That's another good way to see it. But plan to stay and plan to exercise by just wandering or riding all over the old part of town. You won't be bored, and you could do that for a couple of days and stop in some of the house museums, and it's just a spectacular place, unlike any other on the Loop.
Well, thank you very much. Steve, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, I have a couple of comments, and there's two buildings that are open to the public. One is the old provost office, and used to be the custom house for Charleston.
Right.
And the tour of that is absolutely wonderful.
Yep, it was there during the Revolution, and pirates were put in jail down in the dungeon. Yeah, it's a very historic and beautiful building.
Well, I've had somebody claim it's the second most historic building in the U.S., but I don't know whether it is or not.
Yeah, I don't know what the first is.
Yeah,
maybe it is, it's a special place. Yeah,
and the other thing is, even if there's nothing playing, going into the Dock Street Theater is worthwhile, because the city just spent millions to restore it. But just it's probably set up like the theater was in 1750.
Right, and then as Janice has mentioned, Spoleto, one of the most popular events is chamber music in the Dock Street Theater at lunchtime every day during Spoleto, and that's really special.
Yep. And then
we have tickets for just about every performance, and it's very gratifying, but since we're local to Charleston, we usually bring a grandchild or two to the chamber music, and they're enthralled by it. They just love it.
Yeah, that whole festival is great, as is the wine and food festival, which is in early March, and there's always something going on in Charleston, in addition to just soaking up the architecture and the culture.
And then the third thing, which is not even as specific, is pick an old church, any church, and go in and just look at the memorials on the walls. I went to a wedding down there a couple of years ago, and the church they were in is, there'd be a plaque commemorating somebody that died in 1775.
In our church, which is St. Michael's, which is on the corner of Broad and Meeting, two of the signers of the Declaration of Independence are buried in the churchyard. So, you know, this is a historic place, and you're right, not a single church doesn't have its war dead from Revolution and from the war between the states. So and John C. Calhoun, for example, is buried in St. Philip's graveyard and right on Church Street, but all those churches are worth going in and and seeing what part they all played as in this. Charleston called a holy city because of so many. It has so many different churches. It has something like 6 Episcopal churches on the peninsula itself, which is incredible for that group of people to have so many churches. But that, again, reflects the fact that it was such a strongly influenced by England in the early days.
Well, this has been fascinating, Jerry. It makes me want to go downtown tonight. So, thank you very much, Steve. Thanks
Janice,
for your input.
Janice,
want to say something?
Yeah, before we let Jerry go, I want to ask him about the story about digging up John Calhoun and moving him. Is that true?
I don't know. I can't answer that because I don't know. I have no idea.
The story the carriage guides tell is during the Civil War, so the Union wouldn't get a hold of Calhoun's body, they dug him up and moved him across the street to a different cemetery. And then when the war was over, dug him up and put him back where he started.
Yeah, he was a war hawk. He was known in the time, he believed very strongly that it was constitutionally appropriate for a state to withdraw from the Union, and that's why he was a little unpopular in the North. But he felt very strongly. He was a bright guy and a constitutional lawyer. He thought it was okay to secede from the Union, but obviously Abraham Lincoln and others felt very differently.
Okay, again, our website is www.greatloop.org. If you have any questions, feel free to call me, Janice Cromer, 877-478-5667. I am at extension 5040, and thanks for listening. Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, Steve. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye, buddy.
Bye.
Bye, Beth.
Bye.